Now we are heading across the pond with Ian Anderson from Jethro Tully's on the line. Hey, Ian.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm surprisingly well.
Good. Now, I should start out by saying, as a kid, and I'm not that young, I'm 30 years old, but as a kid, our family would go out to the cottage every summer, spend a lot of time out there, and I remember one of the neighbors going on and on about listening to Jethro Tull. And I thought, okay, well, this Jethro guy sounds pretty cool after I heard his music. And then I did my research and I found out information about the group. So for those who might not be familiar, the pop culture audience that we have tuned in, what's the story behind Jethro Tull? It all started back in 1967, right?
Well, technically started in February of 1968, but the boys, four of us who were the original Jethro Tull band, got together, I think, in December of 1967. And through January and early February, we had a number of different names as we were learning to ply our trade, and our agent gave us a number of names to change the name pretty much every week. And it was, I think, February the 11th of 1968 when we were suitably well received at London's famous Marquee Club, and the manager asked us to come back and be a resident band, you know, play there every 2 weeks or whatever it was. So at that point, we had to stick with the name we had that week, which was Jethro Tull. Not one of my favorite choices of names, but my agent was a history student and named the band that week after an 18th century agriculturalist who invented the seed drill. Could have been worse. He might have called us Genghis Khan or Adolf Hitler or something. So we got off lightly.
Well, you know, when I think agriculture, I think of what... No. But I mean, I guess I should ask you about that then. How important is a name when it comes to a group? I guess you learned the hard way by having to try out a bunch of different ones.
Well, I imagine it's useful to have a name that is trips off the tongue and is one you can remember and not something too complex or... Mm-hmm. But I don't think the name was really terribly important at the time. I think the important thing was that we were part of a growing subculture of young blues bands around the London area who were getting attention. There were a whole bunch of us who would regularly appear at the Marquee Club, and some of them like Fleetwood Mac and Savoy Brown, and went on to achieve quite a lot of success in the USA. I mean, of course, then Fleetwood Mac morphed into a kind of West Coast pop group, but they started off as a bona fide blues band with Peter Green singing and playing guitar. So, yeah, a few of us did well, but we were the ones that were the odd ones out because we had a flute in the band and nobody else did, and the flute wasn't really an instrument associated with blues. And so it made us stand out from the crowd at a time when standing out from the crowd was important. So in marketing terms, it was a point of difference. Made us jump off the supermarket shelves right in your face.
And I guess that's one of those things, because as the group has evolved, so has the sound of your music, and you've adapted, right, by including, as you say, a flute in some types of music that might not necessarily have a flute, right? So there was nothing too drastic, really. Or was there any sort of drastic change in your styles? Was it a natural progression? Like, you know, you've covered a couple similar types of genres over the years.
The drastic change took place, really, in the summer of 1968, after we'd released our first album, and I started bolstered by a bit of confidence that I could write some music. I started working on songs for the second album, but they were not going to be blues, because I never felt qualified to be a blues artist, in the sense that I'm not of that that culture. I'm not of that nationality. I'm not black. I'm not American. I don't have the experience, the ancestry, the genetics of the blues artist, the genuine article. And I didn't want to be out there just mimicking, as a middle-class white boy, something that was, to me, you know, too much of an important music form to just copy.
We've got to get back to the music. More with Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull right after this. Jethro Tull's Ian Anderson still joining us on the line. Now, I mean, you're still touring after all these years, though. What keeps you going? Like, why are you still touring? I guess obviously the love of it, but is there one sort of singular thing that keeps you going on the road?
Yes, it's a dark and mysterious obsession that's probably Sir identifiable and one that would keep a psychiatrist and possibly a doctor of medicine amused for hours. I think you can look at most people in the world of arts and entertainment, that few of them want to voluntarily retire. I mean, most of us have to be dragged kicking and screaming from the stage and told it's time to stop. I think when you do that for a living, and it's been your primary occupation all of those years, it's something you really don't want to bring to an end. I mean, I would say the same thing for Formula One racing drivers or international tournament tennis players. They really don't want to quit, but sooner or later they have to. And musicians tend to go on longer than most. We're not perhaps as bound by the physicalities of growing old in the way that a racing driver, a tennis player would be. But you know, we do tend to want to end our days doing the thing that we have an obsession for. But it is an obsession, and perhaps not always an entirely healthy one, because you can see how some people have been driven over the edge by it. I mean, Michael Jackson couldn't bear to end his career not being the king of pop, and it was a big mistake. I mean, the tragedy was the poor man decided he had to come back and do everything on the same scale as he'd done it before, which was just a ridiculous thing for a 50-year-old man to try and do. I mean, he was just not physically, let alone mentally capable of it, and couldn't clearly prevent himself from falling into that trap of ego and an almost arrogant ambition to be recrowned as the king of pop. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, I think Michael Jackson should have come back, but he should have come back with a piano trio, sat on a bar stool and played music that would have entranced everybody, but without trying to outdo what he did when he was, 30 years younger. So, yeah, you've got to be a little careful. You know, Frank Sinatra, he overstayed his sell-by date considerably, and I saw him in his twilight years, and it was a little bit of the magic was still there, but I guess, if you were seeing him for the first time, you would have thought he was a pretty bad nightclub singer on a cruise boat somewhere off Miami. He really wasn't very good, but I'm glad I saw him nonetheless. And so I think we all have to be reminded sometimes by our harsh critics that that it's time to quit. Some of us last longer than others. But, I'm 65. Begs the question, when I'm 70 years old or 75 years old, I think the mutiny bells will be ringing, warning me that it's time to stand down.
Mm-hmm. If you weren't doing music, hypothetical, 40 years earlier, what would you be doing if you weren't doing this?
Well, if I had a head for heights, I think I'd be an astronaut. My flute's been into space, but I haven't, and I don't think I'll be going anytime soon, because I'm not very fond of getting up on high buildings, let alone top of a Soyuz rocket. So I shan't be doing that anytime soon, and maybe I would have followed one of my earlier career choices. I was pretty keen on a career in the police force when I was a teenager. I also thought about being an actor. I mean, that's something I could still do. I mean, not something I've ever tried, but maybe I could do that. I could do probably a reasonable job if I was in the broadcasting world, in terms of presenting radio or television. There's a few things I guess I would have done in either, part of the police force, which was my earlier choice. I think I then went on to think about journalism as a career.
That's right. Well, I've got connections in radio. You said you want to do broadcasting. Well, just let me know. Tell me when.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, Ian. Thank you so much, Ian Anderson. JethroTull.com. Thanks for joining us today.